Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills. Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown! Brian Burns to the house!
And it is caught for the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. 1, 2, 3.
Keep pounding.
McCaffrey split out wide to the right. Newton takes the snap. And he is in for a Panthers touchdown.
We're back. It's John Ellis, Billy Marshall, another edition of the Roar Podcast right here on Blue Wire. It is a fascinating turn of events here for the Panthers as they have obviously signed Cam Newton, going back to the wishing well. And obviously there were some things in that game besides Cam Newton we're going to get to. But Billy, how are you? What's going on? And your thoughts on the Cam Newton signing to kick things off here?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. So, I mean, the signing itself was, I mean, they had to do it, I guess, because they, and you can't go into, you know, a season with Darnold and Walker or whatever. But I just felt like, I mean, it was the right move to make because he was the best option available. And regardless of any nostalgic viewpoints, I think it's without question an upgrade. And I would say that 99.99% of people who follow the game would agree. You know, I have longer term questions about this regime though, because to me, everything at that position has just screamed incompetence, for lack of a better term, because you had Cam, you let him walk to sign Bridgewater, and you cut Bridgewater to sign to trade for Darnold. So I think this is a question that we will have to tackle in the offseason. I don't want to dampen anyone's mood, but right. I feel like they just have not handled that position correctly, and it just goes, I don't know, it kind of, I've lost a lot of trust in them because of it. And let me be absolutely clear, this has nothing to do with signing Cam Newton. I mean, that was the right move to make. My issue is just go longer term and the direction of what we're kind of witnessing with the guys in charge of this operation.
That's a discussion I definitely want to have, no doubt. I mean, because I go back to the Matt Stafford conversation earlier this offseason and then the Deshaun Watson. And obviously, they are now paying for several quarterbacks as we speak. They're paying for Teddy to not jump on fumbles, by the way. They're paying for Darnold to sit the bench, and then the fifth-year option is in play. And now they're paying Cam Newton a pretty healthy chunk of money here to come in for a half a season and try to presumably give them a little more push in terms of the run game and some familiarity, not to mention maybe filling some seats, getting a buzz going. There are a lot of elements to peel back onto this. But let's talk about the game first itself, because as we said at the top of the show, it's not just about Newton. There are a lot of accolades to throw out there. This was an impressive win, Billy, against a team that you did a preview with Blake Murphy, and you guys did some great analysis on both sides. You and I had talked about this opponent a little bit at the end of our show last week, in that they were probably not going to have Kyler Murray, probably not going to have Nuke Hopkins, but they still had some formidable backs. They still had, you know, to this point, schemed things up very well with Kingsbury offensively and defensively. Look, with the exception of a couple of games, they were doing a pretty sound job overall against the run, and on the back seven, a very good job. So I'll just open it up to you. In terms of the first 7 minutes of that game, what a crazy start. Hassan Reddick, once again, a revenge game for him. We've had revenge games every week, it seems. Gets the strip sack, sets them up on a short field. PJ operates with efficiency. And lo and behold, here comes number one. Here comes Cam Newton. Just out of a fever dream, it seems, for most fans. And they run the old power right. And he's able to overcome a couple of bad blocks. He puts a couple linebackers in the dirt. And there's Isaiah Simmons waiting at the pylon, and he's no match. And I've never seen Christian McCaffrey celebrate quite the way he did. So let's just turn it over to you. Obviously, they hit another touchdown there we'll get to with the sprint option. But what did you think about the first opening, maybe 7 minutes of that game? It was pretty crazy stuff, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I guess anytime you're playing an opponent on the road, you know, an opponent that's 8-1, they're coming off a big road win in their division, you have to start fast. You're 10-point underdogs, and your defense, which has been doing a better job of creating turnovers recently, you have to, you know, really kind of, you know, take the onus to the opponent. And I felt like they did that, and it was just a great play by Reddick to beat Humphreys. I'm sure they had a lot of practices together in the desert when they were teammates. Yeah, I did a really good job and stripped him, and I thought Fox was actually going to return it for a touchdown, but just got tackled by his ankles there. And then, yeah, I thought they did a pretty good and they executed pretty well there in the red zone. You know, PJ found McCaffrey on that little Texas angle route, which, yeah. I mean, not many people can cover. It's essentially a two-way go. I was just really surprised at how Arizona defended McCaffrey. I thought they would put a lot more emphasis on him, given that that's what the Patriots did, and it seemed to work. So I was a little surprised at their defensive game plan, but it worked for Carolina. And then, yeah, you had the execution by in the red zone. I wouldn't even want to call it execution. I thought like four or five players completely like just messed up on that spot. Yeah. Starting from the snap to like the interior just got completely like demolished. Yeah, I mean, if that's PJ Walker trying that, that's like a 5-yard loss.
5-yard loss, right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just goes to show you that, you know, because he stiff-armed. I mean, everyone's like impressed by him running over Isaiah Simmons. I was more impressed than stiff-arming Marcus Golden down. I mean, Golden's no slouch.
It was sick, Billy. It was unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. It was sort of thought back to just quickly interrupt you here that there was a play in the NFC title game before the touchdown where Cam had done the somersault over the pylon. That was the more impressive of the two runs because he had Chris Clemens bearing down on him on a third and long, and he carried him about 4 yards to the sticks and got the first down. And I had a flashback to that play thinking, my goodness, you know, Simmons is there. He's not in a great position. McCaffrey's playing interference there. But, no, you're exactly right. Good point.
So, yeah, John, I was – yeah, I mean, good start to the game. And then, you know, from there, I think they got pretty fortunate. Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say the offense got fortunate with the field position that the defense was able to give them.
Yeah.
Because the next drive, I believe it was – was the next drive the McCoy interception?
No, the next drive – and, no, we'll get to that one as well. But this was an interesting series for Arizona. They started with pretty good field position at the 33.
It was a failed fourth down,
Right. So, you know, Benjamin goes up the middle, and then Bravian Roy, who just blew shit up on that third down one, and then Jermaine Carter with a great job directing traffic on that sneak, and the line just condensed. And, yeah, so, Billy, that's what happened there. And that was a huge, I think, moment in the game for both teams.
Yeah, absolutely, John. I thought that was just a really good moment. But again, the defense setting up the offense with good field position was the key to this upset, in my opinion.
Complimentary football. I mean, that's what we've talked about all year. This is what they did not do against the Giants. And obviously last week was the same story. They, for the most part, played a clean game. There were a couple of turnovers that still concern you a little bit, and you've got to touch on that at some point. But, yeah, I mean, when you – in the red zone, I think your point a minute ago speaks to – again, I don't want to put Newton on a pedestal to the degree that maybe some others do. I respect his game. The jury is still out whether or not he can go the distance here and where his arm is. He only had a few reps here. But the red zone has plagued this team at times, especially in the run game. And the juxtaposition between what happened in that Tampa Bay game, Cam's last game here on that Thursday night where they ran the, you know, the end around there to McCaffrey, the direct snap, I think it was, where he was a yard short. And I think Hargraves made that tackle. Between that and then what happened here, where, to your point, Newton, most quarterbacks would have gone down 5 yards in the backfield. I don't know. I just think it's as much about his ability as a quarterback as it is Matt Rhule's desire to be hard up in the paint, as they say in basketball, to be more physical. And I don't know where this leads, but I know that's a touchdown that a lot of guys can't make. So, to your point, yeah, it was not a beautiful play. The snap was bad. You got Elfline in there back at center. I thought he played okay, but that was not a good snap. And then, yeah, I mean, he's putting linebackers on the ground and getting to the edge. And after he stiff-armed the backer, he had a nice burst there afterwards. See, a nice acceleration to the edge there. And then, of course, the second series there where they're on a short field again. You know, PJ comes in, nice pass to Anderson, who's getting involved now. He's smiling now, Billy. That's good. McCaffrey gashes them for 11. Direct snap to McCaffrey, but that's overturned. He thought maybe he got in the end zone, but he didn't. But, again, that just sets up one more play for Newton to go sprint right option, which Matt Rhule had said to Peter King. And obviously we know football. It's not, you know, science here. It's a sprint right option play that they ran it. San Francisco back in the 81 title game with Dwight Clark. It was you've got an option on the flat. You've got a zigzag type of option on the back line there, and you've got a back there in Hubbard who is sort of doing some lead blocking with the sprint protection. So I thought it was a great call, and I thought the throw was really good considering the DB had his back turned. And Robbie Anderson back in the end zone scoring in. So before you could turn around, Billy, I mean, this game is only a few minutes old, and they're looking at a two-possession lead at that point. And I think that's where you can have some fun with Phil Snow's defense. Obviously, we've seen this before. We've seen a team build a lead in Carolina and then they lose it. But if they cannot turn the ball over, if they can be clean offensively and run the ball and play action off of that, boy, a 14-0 lead goes a long way. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it was a good way to start the game.
Even on the the McCaffrey Wildcat, that again, that play wasn't supposed to work. It's just McCaffrey's talent shining through because he cut back all the way across the field and kind of used his burst. I mean, Arizona played that really well.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just where, like, if that's Hubbard or Amir, it probably doesn't happen.
No, I agree. And that's going to be fun to watch in terms of if McCaffrey can stay healthy because he looked – obviously, he had more snaps in this game, and that's the first thing you look at. And the second thing you look at is they utilized him, I thought, very well in terms of those snaps. They played him in a number of ways. They had him in the passing game, obviously, out of the backfield. They had him out wide at times. In fact, that one run that Newton had, he was out there wide on Simmons, and it sort of opened up the edge. And I thought Joe Brady called a great game. I think he's been calling good games. And I get back to the point again that, you know, we'll talk defense here. We'll talk more about the matchups in this game and what happened. But Joe Brady has been coming under a lot of fire from people that don't host this show. And while we've been fair in the critique at times, I thought he called a good game because he understood coming in, look, we've got a great opportunity with PJ Walker to play small ball. Let's keep it safe. Let's emphasize to PJ, and PJ did a good job with this for the most part. Get the ball out quick, get to your reads quick, play efficient football. Don't bolt out of the pocket when you don't need to. I thought the protection was pretty good too, Billy. I mean, for the first time all year, I don't know if it was a matter of, you know, just Cam or you know, PJ or whatever, or just they just got a better lineup there. I know JJ Watt is out, but they usually get pretty good pressure, and I didn't see much of it in that game. So I thought Joe Brady called a nice game, and I thought the line did a much better job. And dude, there were some holes in that run game that were similar to that Atlanta game. So I was really impressed by that.
No, I agree. I thought the offensive line had their best game of the year. Taylor Moton, he did his job against two really good edge rushers, and Golden and Chandler Jones. I mean, Chandler Jones was completely quiet this game. Not sure what was going on there, but yeah, I just felt that the offensive line, they played their best game when they had to, and maybe moving Elfline that center kind of gives them something new. I don't know. But I thought he had a good game. I know, you know, that one play where the touchdown by Newton obviously doesn't look great, but I thought for the most part he did well. And I guess the other thing that I want to point out here is that I'm not sure, like the offensive, like the pass designs, I thought really they did a good job of it, but this is kind of like a little bit of my worry is that they're just asking the QBs to be a little too conservative with their field vision, and they're just looking to the McCaffrey each time. I'm not saying that's a bad idea.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, there were a couple instances where Walker just completely, like, didn't, you know, read the field correctly. And I'm not saying he can't read the field. I'm just saying, like, he missed, like, a couple big opportunities to Anderson. I know Ricci on was coming on a deep over route on 3-by-1 formation. And then I just hope that, you know, if once they fully integrate Cam, like, this isn't something that's going to be taken away. Because, again, like, these receivers are good and these pass concepts are pretty, uniquely designed. So we have to take advantage of it. We can't just always check it down to McCaffrey. I mean, the guy did end up in the medical tent. So it's like,
That's true.
I'm not sure who's responsible for this, but the coaches have to do a better job, I think, of teaching quarterbacks to, you know, go through the progressions and just don't, I understand turnovers are bad, but you want to show some aggression. I mean, this team is still lacking explosive plays on offense. And that's something that needs to change, I feel like, if they want to really make a push for the playoffs.
Yeah, this mirrored the Atlanta game in a lot of ways in the fact that they did not have one play over 17 yards. They had a chunk of plays between 17 and 13 that were their longest plays. And I agree with you. I understand what you're getting at there. I think maybe with PJ, there was probably some overemphasis this week on, look, we've been dealing with a real shitstorm here in terms of pick sixes, in terms of just absolute bonehead mistakes. So let's dial it back and be extremely cautious, and let's let our defense win. Let's let the running game do its thing. I know that's not something that you and I necessarily agree with at times, but I know that PJ has a tendency to get sloppy. So I think maybe it was in order for this game to be a little more conservative and just get McCaffrey involved, get it done underneath. I agree with you, though. There were some plays on tape. I haven't looked at the whole tape yet. I've looked at about maybe 30% of it, and most on just sort of the early downs, early game action. I haven't seen what you saw there, but I believe it. I totally believe it because it's been that way every week. So I think hopefully – we'll have this conversation here shortly about Newton getting the full reps this week and getting into this Washington game and how they match up. But I do hope Newton will take – and he did take one shot to Moore, to be fair, and it was a decent throw. I don't know if you disagree with that. I thought at first maybe it was a little late, a little short, but I'm not going to nitpick. At least he gave his guy a chance, and they drew a foul off it. So that's what you want to see, obviously, with these receivers. But, man, McCaffrey, I know we got to be careful how we use him, Billy, because he was in the medical tent. But you just see now him back at full strength, what an asset he is. I mean, that one run he had where they were sort of in – a twins look there with two tight ends left and they had two wide receivers right. And PJ might've even made a check at the line there on it. And the cut he made, I think Baker made the tackle in the open field, but that cut McCaffrey made to get outside and then up the field, that's pretty rare. I mean, that's some rare stuff. And that's something you don't see from Hubbard yet necessarily with that burst. Not to mention when you get a check down to McCaffrey, you're pretty much guaranteed to get anywhere between 8 to 10 yards on top of that. He's physical. He's pretty good in pass pro. He missed one block in this game, I think I saw. But, yeah, I totally hear you. They got to explode at some point offensively. It won't be sustainable. I think they could work this formula into a wild card type of role, but you'll be going against teams then that are, you know, putting up 30, 40-yard passes. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the story of the first half in a lot of ways. Zane Gonzalez, by the way, just continues to impress Billy. I mean, you called it. I mean, this guy is money, again, perfect in this game. Got the field goal there before halftime. And once again, these are not easy field goals. These are, you know, 40-plus yarders, which he's been perfect with this year. 23-0 at halftime. That first half, honestly, particularly the second quarter, you're talking about an 11-to-3-minute advantage, basically, roughly. 3 of 6 on third downs, 0 of 3 defensively on third downs when you're looking at Arizona. So they had them right where they wanted them. I thought that game was over at halftime, quite honestly. Now, the third quarter is always scary if you're Carolina. But they came out. They did some good things. They obviously held Prater to a field goal there early, and that was big. And then they come right back after that, a rare third-quarter touchdown drive, and Chuba Hubbard with nobody in sight, by the way. I've never seen so much real estate in my life on some of these runs. Hubbard takes it in from 5 yards. So they get the two-pointer. Good to see Terrace Marshall getting in action. But, Billy, I thought the third quarter was pretty good. I thought they came out. They came out with some intensity offensively. They kept establishing what they were doing. Any other thoughts on the offense in terms of the general game? And then we're going to get to Cam in a minute.
Not really. I mean, it was a pretty – I just think the entrance of McCaffrey kind of really allowed their running game to be a little more consistent. And, you know, while they weren't explosive, they did have some longer runs than what they had against Atlanta. Atlanta, I think the longest run by running back was like 9 yards. They were much more – I think they were doing a better job of creating angles in the run game, the offensive line, particularly Taylor Moton, who, again, had – I thought he was the best player on offense on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, he was really good.
I thought – yeah, so he impressed, you know, creating angles and moving guys in the run game. And, you know, just get McCaffrey to the second level and he'll do his job. And, you know, some of those Arizona linebackers, I think that they've invested a lot in that position, but some of those guys, they need to hit the weight room because they just were getting bounced off contact too easily.
Right.
But, yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. I think this offense, again, I thought the play designs were good, especially in the pass game. I'd like to see a little more under center play action. Felt like they were in shotgun a little too much. So I do want to see some under center play action. Let's, you know, whoever's the quarterback read 1 to 2 and then right back. I really want to see just some progression by these quarterbacks to really give their receivers a chance. I really want to see that because right now I'm just, you know, it just seems like they're just relying too much on McCaffrey, and I don't think that's a sustainable formula. I'm not saying you shouldn't be used, especially like on a third down situation. But like if you're throwing the ball in first and second down, I really think the best option is to just give your receivers a chance. And, you know, whether you're reading half field or full field, I'm not saying it's a difficult and not saying it's an easy thing to do, but I just think the development of the offense really relies on the ability to create explosive plays. And the best way to do that is throwing the ball.
Totally got it. Just a quick hit on defense here. I don't think there's much to say, even though they deserve a lot of credit, but I'll give you sort of my 2 minutes on it here. I thought, obviously, when you're going against a Colt McCoy, it's a little different than Kyler Murray, to say the least. You don't have to rush with a certain amount of discipline there. You can get after him a little more. Obviously, Nuke Hopkins being out is never fun. If you're Arizona, that's a player that has given teams nightmares over the years. I'll say this, that you look at Shaq Thompson, the energy he has brought, Billy. NFL Next Gen Stats just had him pegged for the fastest sack of the year. And I know part of that was probably a really bad play on that guard. But, again, credit to him for getting in there. 2 quarterback hits, tackle for loss, sack, 6 combined tackles. They weren't on the field a lot either. So some of these stats are even more impressive considering how little they were on the field. Hassan Reddick, again, just a tremendous asset. We talked about the great bargain that was, and he hit the quarterback 3 times, forced a fumble, sack and a half again. Morgan Fox got the other half sack. Marquise Haynes late in the game got some action, so 4 sacks in that game. Obviously, Dante Jackson sat back. Is one of the things we talked about in some of my analysis prior to this game with a Colt McCoy. situation. You know, look, he's not the worst quarterback in the world. I understand he's a serviceable backup, but the idea is to get pressure with as few people as possible, sit back, and allow those floater balls to come to you. And it's good to see Carolina this year, at least lately, they're catching these. They're making plays on these. And Dante, once again, making a big play. Linebackers have played well. You mentioned Shaq. I thought Jermaine Carter played a very nice game as well. And then you saw some guys situationally, Yetur Gross-Matos in the game. C.J. Henderson had some reps. Keith Taylor looked solid. Bravion Roy played a good game, I thought. Very good game against the run. And then, you know, you guys, like a Brian Burns, there's probably some lingering things going on there from an injury perspective, I just have to think. But I do think Brian is going to have to continue to understand he's going to get a little attention. I saw some times where there were some two-man protections on him. But you want to see Brian maybe a little more involved. I can't knock him too hard after what happened last week. But I think he'll probably have a better week this week. But he was a little quiet in this game. But I thought defensively they did what they had to do. They took the ball away. They stopped the run. They absolutely throttled the run. I mean, Arizona has been running the ball fairly well throughout the season, and they just totally did not allow it. What did you see on tape, and how did you come away grading this defense?
Yeah, I mean, the defense played an A-plus game, starting not only up front but in the secondary. And, I mean, John, we mentioned it, that Shaq Thompson's return really has solidified them, and they're starting to look like – you know, I mean, they were obviously a good defense when he wasn't there, but now when he is in there, it's back to that level that we thought at the beginning of the year, where it's a, you know, maybe a top five, top three unit in the entire league. And yeah, I thought they're – I haven't watched all the defensive tape yet. I'm sure you have. But, you know, from what I was able to see, I thought it just guys were flying all over like they usually do. But, you know, being in the right position and really affecting McCoy. And again, McCoy is not – He's not necessarily it's tough to explain this. He's mobile, but he's not like he's not a statue essentially.
Right.
But he's also not like Kyler Murray who can scramble and run around. So the best way to just affect a guy like this is really, you know, get your edge rushers, you know, rushing upfield, but you know, have your defensive linemen like really attack, you know, the gaps that they leave vacated. And I thought they did a good job of that. I thought you saw some good interior push. And I didn't really think the Cardinals receivers did much. I mean, AJ Green looked like there was some miscommunication issues with him and McCoy. And I think the biggest thing is just taking away like the short passing to the running backs. That was a big thing that they did against the 49ers where they really gashed them. And I think Carolina did a pretty good job of just making sure like Connor and Benjamin don't really get going. So, yeah, good on them for really kind of making sure that the game plan was to limit the yards after catch, because that was how they won the previous weeks, and they didn't really allow that this week. They just did a really good job of keying in on those running backs and, you know, playing some good coverage in the back end.
No doubt. I think if you look at PFF's metrics, they graded differently, but in total pressures, they had 16 as a team in that game. However you measure it, there's different measurements out there that they were consistently getting, like they have all year, Billy, maybe with the exception of, I can't think of a game maybe where they hadn't, maybe Dallas, but yeah, like Reddick had four pressures in that game, and Marcus Haynes had three, Brian Burns still had two, Thompson had a couple, and then you had a bunch of guys with one. I thought Derek Brown played, you know, a pretty decent game as well. He's been good for most of this season. And again, I just continue to look at young guys like Keith Taylor. I mean, again, he only had a handful of snaps. In fact, he had 25. That's not bad. And I thought he played pretty well. Again, just in terms of coverage, the safety play I thought was okay. I think they can still get a little better production there from guys like Chandler and Franklin. But we're nitpicking at that point. Gilmore obviously did not play a lot, but it looks like he's going to be okay for this week, so we hope so, obviously, because that's a fun guy to have. So, yeah, that's kind of my thought on the defense, yours too. We'll look at more tape coming up here. The Cam Newton signing, we talked about it at the top of the show, and again, we're going to be fair about this because a lot of shows are just drowning in Newton content, and, you know, I'm going to be the first to tell you I'm excited about this for a lot of reasons. It's mostly football, I think there's some iconic stuff here going on and some cultural stuff here from a fan base standpoint that is very helpful. You're going to get more fans back in the seats. You're going to get more energy. We talked to a couple of players last week on our show on Fox Sports Upstate, and they talked about the energy level in that building just going through the roof. And I'm just the visual of it, Billy, at the end where Matt Rhule and Cam Newton are embracing and talking to one another. At the end of the day, I think like Stanley McClover had said it best, John, it's a business. It's just business. Money will cure a lot of things, and winning will cure a lot of things. And I think had that they lost that game, had it gotten ugly, you know, you wouldn't have seen any sort of embrace or any sort of, you know, fanfare that you're seeing now. But from a football perspective, and tell me if you disagree with this, I don't know where he is in the passing game. I don't. That tape from New England last year was not great. But it was also a little confusing, too, because there was a lot of stuff going on there out of his control. No question he's regressed a little bit in that department. But I think two things. Number one, he spent a year with Belichick, and I think that's a pretty valuable year of education. I've heard this from other coaches out there as well talking about this, that you spend a year in that system. You don't just learn offense from McDaniels. You have conversations with Bill about coverages and schemes and how to be a better quarterback through that. I think he takes a little bit of that with him. People are making this big deal now. He looks like a better leader. He's a different Cam. No, he's not. He's always been this way. He's always been very vocal and very helpful to his teammates. He hasn't changed in that regard. But in terms of the schematics, how do you think Joe Brady will incorporate Cam into what he likes to do? Because I tell me if I'm wrong. I think what Joe likes to do historically is a little different from what they tailored here in terms of what Mike Shula, Rob Chudzinski, even North Turner did to a degree. I've maintained, try to go back to a little bit of what the design was with the 2008 stuff. Just continue to give him multiple looks and sort of a West Coast type of passing game, and then run that mesh point run game with McCaffrey, which can be lethal. Am I wrong to be a little excited about this? And if I am, tell me where I should step back a little bit.
No, I don't think you're wrong to be excited about it. I feel like my expectations right now are a little more tempered for like the potential for this offense. I just want to see like competency, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And right now, like they're, you know, in most metrics, they're like one of the worst offenses in the league. So if they can just go from like worst to like below average to average, I think that'll make a world of difference. And I think the best way to do that is just to keep everything simple. You know, and I think defenses will probably pick up on it eventually, but then by that point, you'll expand the playbook. And I think the biggest thing they have to do is just to incorporate a lot of the concepts that we've already seen them do. You know, QB power, some read option, mm-hmm. Sprint option. You know, he's got to get the timing right on some of these quick game concepts, but you know, as far as like the entire playbook, I don't expect that to be implemented, nor should it. And again, this just goes back to my point. And like, if you had Newton here for, you know, 20 months ago and he's still going through the offense, I think he'll be in a better place, but that's not neither here nor there. but yeah, no, I think if this offense can just get to like a 16 to 18, like production range, whatever metric you look at, then yeah, that'll really just kind of elevate the entire team and make them much more complete in all areas.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it needs to be a total scheme change, and maybe I overstated there, and I'm glad I got your perspective. I do think you're right. I actually spoke with Doug Farrar last week on my talk show about this, and Doug and I and you have talked about this on our pod, and you're right. You nailed it on the head just like Doug did. They've been running this stuff with Darnold. You know, in terms of red zone package, the read option stuff has been fairly effective. So again, I don't think there's much change there. I think, yeah, right. Keep it simple because, you know, Newton is a good athlete, you know, get him involved in the running game. He's still very good in that department. He was excellent last year in that department. He had 12 touchdowns, ran with authority. The foot looks just fine. You know, the shoulder, I'm a little tired of talking about it, to be honest. I mean, everybody's got an opinion on it. I think it's pretty clear that when you sustain that kind of injury, you're going to eventually have some wear and tear and some regression with it. I just don't know if that's going to happen right away. I think that's sort of a, you know, 3 or 4 year window here. But I my expectations are, look, let's enjoy this. I think a lot of fans needed a lift here just to see Cam back, some energy back. I mean, I saw McCaffrey celebrating on that touchdown run by Newton. Dude, I've never seen McCaffrey celebrate like that in my life. I mean, it just goes to the point where you can guy can come back into the building, whether he's been here before or not. And, you know, some of these guys that are playing with him now are guys that honestly probably watched him play while they were in high school. And they look up to him and they see him as a guy they like. I mean, Cam is very well respected among players. You know that. Among pundits or even some coaches out there or some front office guys. Remember that conversation we had with Jordan Rodriguez last summer, Billy, where she said, hey, you know, there's front office people that have been chirping about Cam. It's not just the media. So, yeah, I just think it's interesting that the circuitous path they've taken, Billy. That's what's frustrating, though, on the flip side. They're spending a lot of money right now on quarterbacks, and two of them aren't playing. One of them is playing for Denver. It's just a long route to travel. I give them credit, and I think you have to a degree, for being sort of okay with saying, look, we think we might have screwed up. And Cam actually coming back and saying, okay, that sounds good. Now give me some guaranteed money. That's kind of how that thing went down from what I'm hearing. It wasn't necessarily that the Panthers need to feel embarrassed about this. I don't think it's the fact that, you know, they're admitting a mistake. It's childish to talk about it that way. They needed a quarterback. They screwed up. They found one available. I said all last week, I said, I never saw this happening. And this is before it happened, but I said, it makes sense from a football perspective because we know he can at least manage an offense. He's a veteran. He can run the ball. And he can at least make you competitive enough to where this defensive performances you see have some more value for you this year. You can actually, you know,
no, I agree.
They're in the playoff race.
I mean, they're there.
I'm not going to say they're going to go far, but they're there. And I'm fascinated to see what happens next. But just my final thought on it is I think they need to get more disciplined in terms of roster building. They have to, especially quarterback. I love that Cam's back. I don't know if this is going to last past this year. I don't. We'll see. I tend to think they might just see it as a Band-Aid because, you know, hey, look, we need somebody now, right now, to help us push for the playoffs. They have been all in on that all year, Billy. That's why they got Gilmore. That's why they've been aggressive in free agency. But I don't know, man. I just think at the quarterback position, they've had their chances to get some good guys, and now we're here mid-season with a losing record, and they signed Cam Newton. So I love it, and then I scratch my head at it at the same time.
No, I totally agree. It's a Band-Aid over a larger symptom with this organization right now. You know, I won't. Yeah, it's tough to really give kind of gloomy thoughts, especially after such a big win. But you know, Cam Newton does not deserve to be used in this sort of light. What I mean by that is, let's not forget everything that this organization has done prior to last week, all the bad moves, especially at the quarterback position. And to me, they're just like completely all over the place. It just looks chaotic, from giving Bridgewater that big deal to shipping him off and paying him to go to Denver and then trading for Darnold and guaranteeing his fifth year option. I just want everyone to understand, like, let's not lose sight that this organization, just 20 months ago, they've done all of that. So it's going to be really tough for them to rebuild that trust, especially with me. And if anyone feels differently, that's, you know, their prerogative. But right now, I really want to believe in them, and they've given me no reason to. And I think, you know, while the signing of Newton was a great move in the short term, I just really hope that they can just become a little more consistent. And I've always say that, and I always preface that, you know, when they make decisions, but to me, that they've been off a lot more than they've been right.
Right. And here's the thing. They gave him starter money, Billy. I mean, and that's part of, I think, the negotiation there that went into this, with Newton obviously feeling very scorned when this went down, and rightfully so to a degree. It was not a pretty breakup. He felt misled. There's two sides to every story. We're not going to relitigate that, but we had to revisit it to a certain degree. $4.5 million guaranteed at signing. with the potential to make up to $10 million from what I understand. So it's not a small chunk of change there. I mean, it's a one-year thing. My sources tell me they tried to go 2 years with it. Both sides did, but ultimately it just didn't work that way. So, yeah, I think I get where you're coming from. I think fans just want to feel happy about this team after all the years they've been through of just bad performances and bad quarterbacking and even Newton down the stretch getting hurt and not playing at his best. But there is an element to this that I'm glad you brought up, that there has to be a little bit of caution exercised in terms of the decisions that are being made here all the way from the top. And I'll just say this again. I know everybody's riding high right now. I get it. But David Tepper really pretty much was in a bidding war with Dave Gettleman and John Mara for Matt Rhule at the end of the day. Matt Rhule was a coach that had proven nothing on this level. So I respect Rhule as a coach, but I still have my doubts as to how he'll compare favorably to other coaches around the NFL. Meanwhile, he's making the seventh highest salary. Whatever. Not my money. Not my problem. Then you – first thing you do, basically, as this head coach, is you decide you want Teddy Bridgewater. That was done before the ink was on the paper. And the decision to let Newton go, I'm sure, came with a lot of thought. I don't know if they decided right off the bat, but it happened. It left a lot of people very sour about the situation. But then they overextend, Billy. That's what I don't like. They overextend financially for Bridgewater. They overextend financially for Darnold, not only in terms of the fifth-year option, but giving up compensation for one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. And now they're sitting in a position where, to me, I like Cam a lot, but they're paying him a nice chunk for this amount of time rest of the season to bring him back in. And you can't tell me there's not some PR stuff involved here with this. And I get it. I understand it. It was nice. He only played a handful of snaps. So it was great theater. It was a great emotional lift, I think. But that stuff wears down if you don't keep winning. So he's got a game coming up here against a Washington defense that got a lot better last week. Ron Rivera knows everything about Cam Newton. I mean, nobody knows this guy better. And you got to think it's going to be a much tougher test for Cam being, you know, getting all the snaps. I just think people need to be cautious because it feels good right now. Great win on the road. But to your point, competency is what they need right now. It doesn't need to be fancy. Doesn't need to be extravagant. Get in the middle portion, middle chunk of that offensive group in the league. You know, average maybe 25 points a game would be nice because your defense is averaging less than 20 right now, which is almost unheard of this day and age. I keep coming back to that. Billy, it used to be that giving up maybe 20 points a game was like, ah, you're pretty average. Now, if you give up 20 points a game now, you're pretty damn good. So I agree with you in that regard. Just be cautious here, fans. You know, fan however you want to fan. Enjoy it. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the visuals, the excitement, the energy. I think there's better chemistry now. I think it's fun to do this. But it's a very rare thing to get remarried after 2 years from a divorce, and it was not a pretty one. So I just think we got to be careful here. I still have concerns about how invested Rhule is on this. I really think this was ownership driven. I really think this was about Steve Drummond, who is the right-hand man of Dave Tepper. My understanding from John Alexander, we talked to him the day the story broke. He broke the news, by the way, along with a couple of others, that Fitter was not in the meeting with Cam initially, which read into that what you will. But at the end of the day, you know, how will Rhule mesh with Cam? He already said in his press conference about the penalty Cam got the first play of the game. He's like, I told him not to do that. Well, you know, okay, I got it. Probably wasn't smart. I didn't know that was a penalty after you exit the end zone, but whatever. I can see Matt's point. He's not going to give Cam the latitude Ron did, is what I'm telling you. I think you know what I mean by that. And it'll be interesting to see if that becomes a problem. But he's not going to play, you know, limited snaps anymore. He's the full-time starter. And Billy, they've got to produce because the defense is just too good to waste this year. Panthers fans, football is back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find Panthers tickets anymore. Because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site, and the only one you'll ever need is your go-to for all NFL tickets. TickPick got rid of those awful service fees that the other ticket services charge, which lets them guarantee the best pricing on all of their tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find a better price for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. It's a great time to be a Panthers fan. Cam Newton is back in the building. The defense is playing lights out. Get over to TickPick.com/roar right now to save 10% on your first order of Panthers tickets. Again, that's TickPick.com/roar.
You know, this is just back to my point. It's, we've been talking about those final four games for, you know, months, and you know, I just think it's really unfair to Cam to put all of the expectation and all of their playoff hopes or whatever you want to say into those final four games, because you're facing three elite defenses and going to Buffalo and it's going to be probably less than 20 degrees. It's going to be cold. And to me, it just doesn't seem fair that a guy, you know, has to learn an offense within a month to a month and a half and then be expected to win, you know, at least two of those games if they want to remain in contention. And so I just, you know, this is, get back to my point that I don't know what they're doing. And I just, the trust factor with this regime in front office has dissipated in my eyes. And again, other people can have their own views, but that's kind of like where I'll leave it. I don't want to continue to belabor this point. I feel like I have stronger feelings that I want to express, but because they won and the vibes are pretty good right now, I'm just going to leave it at that. And hopefully things take care of itself. But if they don't, then, you know, I'll be on this show kind of getting my thoughts much more.
Looking for the receipts from some of the, I mean, look, you've been right most of the year, the 3-0 start. You were the first guy on that CJ Henderson pod to say, all right, look, they started, or at one point last year had a 3-0 run and look how that ended. And I'll say this. I think it's good to be excited. It's also good to understand reality. And I think you're spot on here. It's just enjoy what happened. It was a big win against Arizona. It was a fun win. It's sort of a surreal fever dream type of week for a lot of people. I give the organization, like I said, credit for making what I think was a smart football move in the moment. In the moment, separate this from Darnold and all this, Teddy. In the moment, this was the right football decision to make. I'm stunned that they actually had the nerve to do it. I'm stunned that Newton said yes. But I think that just shows you that, quite honestly, Newton, you said, you know, you feel bad this is on his plate. I get what you're getting at there. But it seemed to me, he weighed all his options here and he looked and said, okay, you know what? Something about this appeals to me. And it's a challenge for him. But I think fans need to understand, you know, look, if Newton does struggle down the stretch in December, you're still playing behind a very inconsistent line. He's only had a few weeks here to get up to speed on a new system. So just understand that that's going to be part of it. I think they might have a better chance to compete now than they did with Sam. But with Sam,
I don't disagree with that at all. My issue isn't that at all. I agree 100%. Right. My issue, though, is people putting these expectations on them to suddenly, like, you know, going to Buffalo and win, going to New Orleans and win, going to Tampa to win. Like, I don't think those are fair expectations. And that's just trying to, what I'm getting at is because they've completely, like, mishandled this position, you're putting those expectations on Cam because this team, I guess, for whatever reason, really wants to make the playoffs this year. And I mean, they're currently, you know, the 6 or 7 seed, but that's my point. It's like, I'm not trying to already come up with excuses for Newton. I'm not doing that. I'm just saying that because they've completely, like, dropped the ball for so many months on this position, and yes, it's clearly an upgrade. I'm not denying that. My issue, though, is what expectations are being put on him and how will that affect the rest of the season into the off season. That's all.
Totally get it. No, I'm with you on there, buddy. We're hand in hand on that one because this is a long view we have to take at what's going on here. This was sold as a 3-4 year kind of rebuild, and in year two, or year one and a half really now, they're making moves like with Gilmore and trading assets away for guys like Darnold that suggest that, hey, you know, we feel like these are guys that can help us make a playoff push now. You start 3-0, things get a little jaded, I think. Things get a little confusing for fans. It looks good, but then you really know when you peel it back, there's some issues offensively. I'm enjoying the fact that, and I think you agree with me totally, that they have an opportunity now to maybe not win many of these games in December, but you talk about high leverage. I mean, you want to be in a position to where you're competing after December 1st with games that mean something to you and them. You don't want to be sitting there as the, you know, Johnny-go-lucky spoiler douchebag coming into a stadium and you're like, oh, well, we're, you know, we're 6-10 or we're 5-11 or whatever, and we're just kind of just playing for pride here. This team eventually needs to be in situations late in seasons where they have something to play for, not just knocking off the other team or not just thinking about draft position from a fan perspective. So long-term, you're right. They got to start really looking at how they operate pro personnel-wise because they've made some decisions that are honestly just egregious. And the quarterback position, it's funny to me that bringing Cam Newton back after cutting him probably is one of the best pro personnel moves they've made in the past 2 years. And it's just ironic that that's the case. But we'll see what happens. Washington's a good team, Billy. I mean, they are not playing great football all season long here. They've had some stumbles. But whenever you can, you know, dominate Tom Brady and the Bucs, Heinicke looked pretty good. Just some initial thoughts on Washington. I don't know, you've probably looked at a little bit of tape on what they do. You're familiar with Scott Turner. You've talked to him before, so have I. And we know Ron very well and his operation. So where's this team? Obviously, Chase Young is out. That's a big one. But how do you see this team matching up with Carolina?
Yeah, I think Montez Sweat is also going to be out. I mean, they're two best players on defense this year have come from the interior with Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen. Jonathan Allen, I don't know why this guy doesn't get more hype. I mean, he's like an elite player. I mean, you watch that game against Tampa. That's a good offensive line, especially in the interior with Marpet and Jensen. And he was taking it to them. And, you know, the best way to beat Brady is to affect the interior of the pocket. And this guy was winning like within 1 to 2 seconds. And that's going to be an issue for this offensive line next week. You know, we talked about Javon Hargrave and how he could impact. Jonathan Allen is like much better than Hargrave, with all due respect to Hargrave. But yeah, no, this defense, I think they're like, I think like earlier in the year when they were struggling, they just had a lot of communication issues in their secondary and they just weren't kind of playing assignment football. Now that, you know, they've kind of cleaned up those issues or just simplifying things for the guys in the back end and, you know, just really allowing their front four to get to work. And, you know, I was listening to, you know, some people who cover the team and they think that, you know, at times Young and Sweat would freelance because they wanted to get their own production. They weren't really playing within the scheme as well, which I don't know. I haven't really watched a tape to, you know, confirm that, but it's right. Interesting that, you know, they didn't really miss a beat after Chase Young went out of the game. He went out of the game in like the second quarter and they still pressured Brady pretty well. So yeah, no, this is, I mean, offensively, we know what they do. It's an offense that we're very familiar with. They got a strong running game. I'm probably more concerned about that running game than I am about their passing game. I think Gibson's a strong runner. They got the, you know, a very good offensive line, especially in the interior with Schweister and Scherf and Roulier, the center. You know, the tackles are okay, but, you know, it's going to come down to how well they kind of move the ball. And it's an opportunity for the offense to continue to improve. And we'll see how they do.
Okay, well, we're going to do a Washington-Carolina preview, of course. Billy and I will line that up for you guys later this week. And, Billy, just last thought, who thought we'd be seeing in the year 2021, at least at the start of the season, a big game at home, Cam Newton against Taylor Heinicke with Ron Rivera in the house? It's just – you can't script this nonsense up any better. It's just an unbelievable season. And not just here, just quickly – around the league, Billy, you can't predict a damn thing anymore. It's just so hard. I mean, there have been teams that started fast. You think they're rock solid. And you know, the Pittsburgh ties with Detroit and the Chargers have been on a skid here. I think we'll talk about Joe Lombardi another day. I've had some thoughts about that. I know you do too. But always good to talk with you, Billy. And folks, you can always subscribe to the Roar Podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, anywhere you want to find it. Billy, enjoyed it, man.
Appreciate you.
I appreciate you. We'll see you next time, guys.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.